Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing the insidious nature of gig work.
Insidious. That's just a fun word to say, Joel.
I almost said it three times in a row, just for added effect.
You know what happens when you say insidious three times in a row, with the lights off, with your hand on the mirror, right? Did you ever do that as a kid?
No.
The, what is it, Bloody Mary with a baby thing?
Oh, yeah, no.
You
never,
remember that?
No, never tried it.
Oh, I remember that, hearing that.
I was probably too scared.
As a kindergartner and being freaked out that people would even, like, we're even talking about that. That was something that
you covered your ears and you were just like,
oh, I don't want to hear that. That sounds too scary. But yeah, man, we feel that there is an insidious nature to gig work. The gig economy, it's more popular than ever, but there's kind of like this messed up, kind of dark underbelly to the different gig jobs out there. We're going to talk about those because those aren't the things that the these different platforms, all the shiny apps, you know, you see the their website and their app on your phone. It looks so clean and polished.
All the pictures of the people having fun doing the gig jobs.
Yeah, but the actual work, it's a lot different than maybe how they portray it. The sun's not always shining like it is.
Right, but we will give the positive
there are benefits
of gig work too. It's not all bad, but we'll get into
not
that.
All doom and gloom
in this episode. But before we get to that, Matt, I just wanted to quickly give people an update. I didn't realize, I was just thinking today as I rode my bike to the dentist before we began this recording, I was like, it's been 10 months since we sold our Nissan Leaf and went down to having one car. And I just kind of wanted to give a quick update to our listeners because I haven't really talked about it all that much.
It's true. Yeah, you haven't. And I'll be honest with you, it surprises me that it's only been 10 months. Like, in my mind, I feel like you've always just had one car. Like, you've joined the one car families out there like us, the Altmixes. And I almost barely remember a time when you were like everybody else out there.
I will say,
not everybody, but
I'm pretty sure the plural of your name is Altmice, though.
Altmai?
Yeah.
No, you just add the yes.
Okay. So I just want to let people know, one, I think that not having a car for our family financially has been a really good thing, having just one car as opposed to two. There was, even so in the state of Georgia, In January, after we sold it, we would have had to pay a $300 tax for owning that car.
Was that a separate EV tax?
Exactly. Okay. Basically, because I don't pay for gas and I don't pay gas tax to help fund the roads, then I would have to pay $300 directly to the state in order to kind of pay my fair share, which I get.
Yeah, but you got to take care of the roads.
I was able to skip out on that. I was able to, I'm able to pay less in insurance costs on the reg, which has been great. It's definitely lowered my insurance costs having only one car instead of two. And, the maintenance factor wasn't that big of a deal. Having an EV, it's pretty cheap to run and maintain. But
until that battery doesn't hold a charge anymore, like my phone.
Right, yeah. Well, and I'll say in some ways, actually, our gas bill has gone up because we're only driving the gas power car when we might have driven the EV. But for the most part, it has been really, really good. And I'm trying to think of like times where we felt stranded with only having one car. And it may have just been once or twice. Like, it's not been a big deal. And in that case, I just used rideshare. And I did complain, I think, on Twitter, I don't know, a few months ago, about just an awful experience with rideshare where it took over an hour to get a ride. And so in that situation, I was really frustrated. I was like, man, I wish I had my own car here. But for the most part, that is so rare. And I'm able to ride my bike most places because where we live is so biker walker friendly. I can get everywhere I need to go on my bike. And so,
And you've been really intentional about making sure that you live within a certain number of miles from your house.
Right. We obviously know that for some of our listeners where they live, it's more difficult. Where we live, we've done it on purpose, but it is a little bit easier to make that switch. And I just wanted to say, hey, 10 months in, it's really not that big of a deal. I'm still so glad we did it. Will we ever go back to having two cars? I don't know.
You're going
to
keep it up?
Yeah, but for the time being, we don't have any plan to change things up. And, my wife actually started grad school, and she has been driving actually more because of that. And I've been forced to not have a car even more than I otherwise thought when we sold the EV. But
so
it's
you're kind
still
of at
been
the,
good.
Good, yeah. So you're kind of at like the peak of inconvenience right now, or, where you might get stranded. So how many times have you actually like paid for a ride if it was like pouring down, raining, or something like
that? So I'm so cheap, Matt.
Yeah.
Like I budgeted for it, but my goal is to not use any of that money.
Yeah. So can you count on like
count on one hand.
Okay.
Yeah.
The number
for sure.
of times that you failed a ride.
Exactly.
That is awesome.
Yeah. And well, there was one time I think when it was raining and I was supposed to take my daughter to school.
I think that's the one I remember.
Your wife came and picked me up, so I didn't pay for a ride. Well, because the Lyft canceled on me.
Yeah.
And I was like, dang it. Okay. So obviously having some rideshare mishaps, you can't necessarily count on it like I thought you could. But even still, I would say it's been overly a massively positive move.
Totally. Yeah, man, that's right. And we'll actually talk more about rideshare later this episode, but let's go ahead and introduce our beer for this episode. And you and I are sharing a Fluffo Sando. It's got a picture of a marshmallow sandwich there there on the front of it. But this is by Pipeworks, and we will share our thoughts on this beer at the end of the episode.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it. But for now, let's get on to the subject at hand. We're talking about the insidious nature of gig work. And Matt, I don't know how you feel about commercials for prescription medications.
Oh my gosh.
They're so weird.
They're pretty annoying. I would say that.
And they're actually illegal in most countries. I believe it's just the United States and New Zealand that allow direct advertising from the pharmaceutical companies to us as individuals. And it's kind of one of those things. It's like, well, you know, I understand why it's banned in so many other places, partly because of the annoyance, but partly because it's like, should I actually be going to my doctor and telling them what prescription drug that I want? Shouldn't they know and be prescribing something based on their own knowledge?
Why am I the one who's prescribing what drug I should use?
Yeah, it's like,
it feels a little backwards.
No, doc, I think I'm gonna make my own diagnosis here. Yeah, but yeah, on those commercials, there's always people doing happy, fun things and taking a vacation with their family or throwing a tennis ball to their dog, taking a hike through the woods,
pushing their grandkids, teaching them how to ride a bike.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's like, oh man, these drugs obviously just make you incredibly happy. Like this must be a good thing because people have smiles on their faces. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think the pharma companies are trying to sell you hard on the fix that their medication is supposed to be bringing. But at the end of the commercials, there's always this disclaimer. There's like a long list of side effects.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's long. And some are more serious, I feel like, than the disease that you're curing. If you want to cure your restless leg syndrome, which, you know, I'm sure is an annoyance, it's a frustration, it's something that you want to have taken care of. It turns out that the cure, the most commonly prescribed medication, could have a side effect that would lead you to becoming a compulsive gambler.
That's ridiculous.
Like, okay, that's a weird one.
And also, intuitively, that doesn't make any sense because here's something that's going to calm down your leg and cause your leg from doing impulsive things. I would think that would also cause you to do less impulsive things overall. You know, like what if other drugs?
It turns out no.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you got a headache? Take this medicine. It's like, and then it'll make your liver hurt, but at least your head won't hurt anymore. I don't like how it's like transferring that malady to another part of your body.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's kind of weird. Like somebody with restless leg syndrome, they're like, I kicked that, but now I can't stay away from the craps table.
Lost all my money.
Exactly. It's probably not a good trade-off, but it's just kind of crazy to think that that's a real possibility. And it's kind of crazy to think that the cure could end up making things worse than the initial problem itself. And I think just that sounds maybe not related to gig work, but as the opportunities to do gig work proliferate, you and I, we feel compelled to say that gig work can actually be similar. It can be like, it can seem like it's the solution to a problem, but in reality, it causes more problems for a lot of people.
No, totally. I don't think we would be the only ones who said that there is an insidious nature to pharmaceuticals and the companies and the things that they're trying to sell as well. But as we're talking about gig work, you know, depending on who you are, you might instantly think that gig work is just, you know, a complete waste of time. Maybe you have a great career, you're really happy with your job. But for others, I think they might see these types of jobs as maybe the answer to all of their life problems. They might think too highly of gig work. And since, you know, at least 1 in 3 Americans actually perform gig work in some way, form, or fashion, this is according to a Gallup poll, it's an important thing for us to cover. And so whichever side of the aisle that you are on, there are certainly benefits worth considering. But also, there's this darker side to gig work as well, and that's what we want to make sure that we're covering. And so we're going to address both sides during this episode. We're going to help you determine if gig work is a good fit for you. And then if yes, we'll actually help you to think through choosing the best one for your life.
All right, so let's do a little bit of a history dive here, Matt, into where gig work started, where it is now, you know, in its current form. It's relatively new on the scene, but it's been around in different iterations, I think, for longer than people might assume. The term initially, actually, gig, it started with jazz musicians back in the early 1900s, like oh yeah, I'm gonna go do this gig. That kind of became the common parlance.
I got a gig tonight.
Exactly. I'm gonna pull out my trumpet and make some noise.
Take the cigarette out of their mouth.
Smoking was more common back then, and
it was. I mean, that's a term that's still used today too with musicians. It's just like, hey, oh yeah, I got a gig this weekend. I got two gigs. You know,
and you probably used that when it came to shooting weddings, right?
Like, yeah.
Oh, I got a gig. Like I remember. Yeah.
It definitely felt a little more towards like the freelancer side of things, but it definitely was. It's just like, this is something I'm going to be at for a limited period of time, and I certainly think that's how gigs kind of came to be a part of our language.
Yeah, and then temp agencies started springing up in the 1940s, which continued to fuel the rise of gig work, where people would work at a job, not taking a full-time position, but it's really incredibly temporary. And then, yeah, in 1995, Matt, stats show that 10% of all Americans were using some type of gig work to make money. And this was even before the internet really came along, making gigging ubiquitous, making it just super accessible for people to work when and how they wanted just through the simple use of an app. And technology, obviously, since then has had a massive impact on our ability to perform all sorts of different jobs in gig form. And yeah, there's pros and cons to that.
Yeah, and that impact has been felt in both good and bad ways. And so it's kind of get us up to speed with, you know, what we think of today when we talk about the gig economy. You instantly think of Uber, you think of Lyft, or even your favorite food delivery service, which is certainly going to be maybe too expensive.
Yeah, I don't have a favorite food delivery service, Matt, because I refuse to use them.
But there are other companies doing unique things in the space as well. Sites like Amazon's Mechanical Turk, also known as MTurk, started simple online gigging. TaskRabbit and Fiverr, they've both normalized gig work even more. Airbnb and Turo, they offer gig work opportunities, you know, with the assets, the items that you already own, whether that be renting out a room in your house or your car. And then Uber came along in 2010, and drivers have now given billions of rides on that platform. And so that's where it's at today. But one of the things worth pointing out here is that gig work seems to be furthering the dissolution of the relationship between employers and employees. It's important to highlight because this comes with positives and negatives that we're going to be talking about today.
Fortunately, doing gig work, and one of the side effects is not that you might become a compulsive gambler. If it was, then we would say, this is really, really bad, guys. Stay away. But let's talk about the pros, you know, some of the benefits of gig work before we jump into the ways that it sucks.
Before we talk about all the insidious aspects of gig work.
Because there are some benefits, and I think actually some of the ways that some of the things the gig economy has done have actually rubbed off on some of traditional employers, and I think that's been good. But really, when it comes down to it, is there anything better than choosing when you want to work? That is like
sounds pretty nice.
One of the top check marks in favor of gig work, right? And because this really was a revolution. Folks who choose to do gig work have ultimate control over their schedule, which jobs they want to say yes to and what they want to say no to. You can stop when you want, both for the day and forever. Like you can be like, I'm giving two more rides tonight and then I'm never doing it again. I'm never opening this app again. Then not just for the evening, but you can blow the popsicle stand altogether.
Then the banana stand. Then after that, I'm going to go to my jazz gig I've got later.
Exactly. Double gigging. Exactly. And there's no one that can tell you otherwise. And so, yeah, maybe let's say Matt and I were on Fiverr poking around trying to get someone to do some web work for us. And we could say, hey, do you want this gig for $150? And you could say, no, actually, I'm ethically opposed to people saving more of their money, and so I'm not going to take this gig. Like, I refuse. But and that's
very few people should be taking that stance.
Right. But it really is up to the individual. Like, I can choose whether or not I want to do this and when I want to do it. And we're seeing, you know, more of the regular economy, like I said, take on elements of this gig work too. Matt, I talked to a friend recently who works for Amazon locally, and he puts together grocery orders. It was just kind of fascinating to talk to him about it. He actually puts on this, like, suit to go in the freezer to start putting packing people's bags, and he does nine orders at a time.
Holy cow.
Very interesting. But he has...
Does he have like special coveralls that he like...
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So he didn't show me a picture of it, but
he... Doesn't get too cold?
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't want frostbite in there while he's working. But yeah, he has just this like a ton of flexibility when it comes to choosing his hours and whether he wants to come in at all. You know, the hours get posted for the next day, the shifts, and there's like variable pay rates among the shifts that he can choose. And he can be like, all right, if I work this shift here, I'm actually going to get paid $2 more an hour, so I'll take that one. Or, you know what, I don't want to choose a shift at all because I'm going to the lake. He really is in charge of that. Even though his job isn't traditional gig work, we're starting to see more employers offer some more of these gig-like perks from, you know, to their employees.
Yeah, on a similar note, one of the benefits of gig work is that you can do it part-time while you have another job. It really can be a side hustle. So because of the flexible nature of gig work, you can take, for instance, MTurk surveys on the side for just a few bucks.
You can even take MTurk surveys while you're at your day job, and you can be like killing two birds with one stone. I don't recommend that.
That might be an unethical use of the company's time.
Yes.
Or you can actually just take a few clients, and maybe you can perform that work in spare time, like outside of your main thing. In an attempt to make it your full-time job, that would might be a more on the up-and-up way of taking on some additional work.
True. I don't actually recommend that. I was just saying it's possible.
You're just joking around. But we wanted to mention this because there aren't as many rules surrounding gig work and how you want to fit that into your life. It makes me think of Outback Steakhouse. What is it? It's like no rules, just right or whatever.
Yeah. That's the motto I live by.
Which, by the way, that doesn't make any sense because like there are a lot of rules in Australia. Actually, Australia.
Probably... the Outback Steakhouse. You can't go back in the kitchen if you want.
Yeah, you can't do whatever you want. But I just really like how you can use gig work to almost like fill in just the cracks of your life when it comes to income, right? Like you've got your main gig, you've got your main job. So it makes me think of like this illustration that I remember seeing when I was in like middle school. But you remember like there's like a glass vase or jar, and you've got a couple big rocks, and then you've got a bunch of sand, and you can fit all of it into the jar below the line if you do things in the right order. So you get those big rocks in there first, and then that sand, it fills in all the little nooks and crannies, and you're able to maximize how much you're able to fit in that jar. Mm-hmm. And I see the same thing with gig work. You've got these small flexible jobs that, especially if you're really going after a savings or an investing goal or a debt payoff goal, these side gigs allow you to slot in some additional money just in all these little cracks that aren't being utilized, that aren't being fully maximized with your day job.
I think that's a great way to think about it, because I think if you're pursuing gig work as your full-time job, for most people that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But if you are pursuing it on a purely part-time basis to fill in some of those cracks, I think it does make a little bit more sense for you to include gig work in your work repertoire. But for another perk though, for many gig workers, it means the ability to earn not just earn side money, but earn instant income. You know, there's not much hating you can do about getting paid instantly for the work that you're performing. If you drive for Uber, you have the ability to transfer your earnings to a debit account that you have linked up to 5 times a day.
That's crazy.
Which is pretty spectacular. It's impressive, right? That's better than getting paid every 2 weeks on a delayed cycle.
Sure.
And this immediate access to your pay has really shifted the reality on the ground when people lose a job, which I think is one of the best things that gig work has ever done. There's this instant job with instant income potential waiting there for you. If you get laid off on a Friday, you can be driving Uber on the next Tuesday, probably after you get your car inspected or whatever. And yeah, it might not pay as well as the job you just left or got let go from, but it can still provide a really helpful financial backstop for people who, you know, unexpectedly find themselves out of work. That's easily one of the biggest pros of gig work.
Yeah, and that financial peace of mind that it brings to you, like before you've even gotten fired, right? Like maybe things are looking kind of, I don't know, maybe things are looking kind of rocky at work, but just to be able to know that you have that as an option to where you can immediately get to work, you're not just going to be sitting on the sidelines, depleting your emergency fund. Instead, right. You can, you know, get back out there, get back to work, start earning money immediately.
Yeah, I was going to say that,
a benefit.
That combo of gig work always being there and then your e-fund, it provides like this, like, 2 biceps worth of strength, yeah, as opposed to just one.
Totally, yeah. And so another one of the immediate benefits, similar to immediate pay, is that most gig work opportunities just take very little training. A typical job requires some on-site training, you know, at the very least, if not like an entire degree, a college degree or years of experience. But as long as you have a smartphone or if you have a laptop, the immediacy that gig work provides can just come as a relief to know that this is something you can get straight to. Virtually anyone can pick out groceries and deliver them. And of course, the more efficient you get at that gig job, the more likely you are to make. But it doesn't require that specialized training. Although, that being said, not all gig work is created equal. While grocery picking is open to virtually anyone, more specific jobs that are up on sites like Fiverr, up on TaskRabbit, they actually require a certain talent or a certain skill set, and they're likely going to be paying better as well.
Yeah, and another benefit of the gigs you'll find on platforms like that, Matt, platforms like TaskRabbit, is there's some variety and novelty involved. So if you get bored easily, you don't want to keep doing the same thing over and over, you're going to have like enough variety maybe to keep you interested. You're often meeting new folks and sometimes getting introduced to entirely new businesses and industries, even outside of a specific app, right? The diversity of jobs that you can partake in is likely going to be seen as a benefit for somebody in the gig workspace.
Sure.
Maybe you're getting tired of driving people around and you're like, I want to do something else. Tired of making conversations with strangers. I get it. Well, you know, you can choose instead to do like cross country or local hauls of stuff that people need shipped with a site like Roadie. So I think in that respect, there is enough variety and enough choice for you in the gig economy that you don't necessarily have to go all in on one company. You can take the more is merrier approach and kind of find ways to benefit from a multitude of different gig work opportunities.
Yeah, you can not only maximize how much you're making, but you can maximize the different experiences that you have as well. And people, I don't know, maybe if you're stuck at a standard 9-to-5, maybe you get tired of the same people every day. And so if you're doing something like TaskRabbit or like Lyft or Uber, where you're meeting new folks every day, that's just a really interesting way just to be exposed to a lot of different ideas, a lot of different industries.
Oh, I definitely get tired of the person I'm around between my 9-to-5.
You're not referring to me, are you? One of the other benefits of gig work is that you're just entirely independent. I think this is one of the main reasons that gig workers choose this path, because there's no boss who's going to be breathing down your neck or, you know, demanding that those TPS reports need to be on their desk, you know?
Or that you got to come in and work over the weekend when you had plans.
Yeah, what does TPS report even stand for?
I don't know. It's just the office
space. It's a real thing.
Oh, is it?
It stands for that meaningless drudge work. As opposed to it's actually something in real life. But the freedom that comes alongside not having a boss to report to, it's hard to quantify. And overall, there is a heck of a lot less bureaucracy to deal with. You know, there's likely no resumes that you had to fill out in order to start working for that, you know, that gig job. Likely you didn't have to interview. And so for many, this is just as big of a selling point, just as the mountainous levels of flexibility that gig jobs offer.
Yep, it is nice to not have to be told what to do. So, Matt, we called this episode the insidious nature of gig work, and it sounds all bright and rosy right now, but it's not. I promise you it's not, and we will get to the downsides, the dark underbelly of the gig economy. We'll get to our thoughts on that right after this.
All right, we're back, and yeah, we actually maybe talked more than we thought we were going to about all the different benefits of gig work, because there truly are some real benefits there, but we want to make sure that folks are aware of the downsides, of the insidious nature of these different gig working apps. So let's get to it, man. I think one of the first things that we want to make sure that we discuss is just the lack of consistency when it comes to gig work. We talked about the flexibility that gig work has to offer, which is super nice. But what if you depend on gig work for most of your pay and you can't get a gig? You know, you might be sitting there, you know, like waiting to earn money. You're sitting there on your phone refreshing, but there are no gigs to be had. No rides as an Uber driver. Maybe nobody wants to rent your car on Turo for a couple of weeks.
No packages that need to be taken across town on Roadie.
Which I can hardly imagine a world where there aren't packages that need to be delivered, right? with how much online ordering that we do. But The Atlantic, they did this piece and they interviewed this guy who does pick up Amazon Flex shifts. And the day that they're interviewing him, he likes to pick up the 4 to 6 a.m. shift. And he just woke up and was sitting there with his coffee and kept refreshing. And there were no blocks. That's what they call them. You have to reserve a block. And so for him, like, that was just going to be a morning that he got up early but wasn't going to actually make any money. That would be incredibly frustrating for someone like me.
Got to smell the roses, but if that's not what you're wanting to do with your morning, that's frustrating.
Exactly. Yeah, sleep is important, man. So it's important to keep in mind that when the demand isn't there, you aren't always going to be able to make money when you want to. And, you know, not only are the market forces going to determine your pay, but because you're just a small cog in this giant machine, you likely don't have much say as to what's going on. Nor do you have the ability to make changes like you could if you actually owned your own business. You're more subject to the whims and policy that the corporation decides to implement. And that's going to have an effect on your ability to work, on your ability to earn as well.
Yeah, and it's hard to push for a pay raise when you're working with this faceless company that you have zero dealings with. You don't have a manager that you work directly to, which is part of the bright side, but it's also part of the downside. You can't be like, listen, I need a raise or it's time to walk. And you know, there's always somebody else willing to open up their app and do that gig if you're not going to. Mm-hmm. So that is definitely one of the dark sides. I think on a similar note, Matt, gig work doesn't offer a career path for people. They're often just, there's no way to advance your career in the gig economy. You're literally just doing a job at a time. And yeah, you're doing it because specifically of the pros that we mentioned earlier, you're not necessarily trying to move up the ladder. You're not necessarily trying to increase your earnings. You know, if you're choosing to be a part of the gig economy, it's likely because you aren't as interested in climbing that corporate hierarchy. But yeah, it is important to note that this is a significant downside. It is fine to start gigging if you want to, but there's just no real avenue, no path for advancement and for making more money, for getting a promotion. That doesn't exist in this world.
That's right. Yeah, you inherently don't have control of your career trajectory. That's because there is no trajectory. Like, basically, you either work and you get money, or if you don't work, you don't get that money.
You're directly trading time for money.
It's incredibly consistent in that way.
Yeah.
I'll say that. Health considerations, man. Like, that's another big downside to most of the gig work opportunities right now. And because of the sort of warped way that we've set up healthcare in this country, your coverage, or lack thereof, is tied to your employer. And so if you are partaking in the gig economy with most of your working hours, you won't have access to that highly subsidized, really nice, posh healthcare plan from your employer. And so that's definitely something you want to keep in mind. I will say there is one bright spot on this front, though. Many folks who are getting paid primarily via the gig economy will be able to qualify for the massively subsidized plans on the healthcare exchange. It's more affordable than you think. And we wanted to mention this because a lot of gig workers aren't aware that they can get these very affordable plans on the exchange. And this was all due to the American Rescue Plan that was passed earlier this year. And so gig workers, if you're out there, make sure that you look into that, because if you're not insured, you are on thin ice because, yeah, medical bills, that's the number one reason for personal bankruptcy in this country.
No doubt. Yeah, I was talking, I mentioned my friend who works at Amazon and he puts together the grocery orders. And I was talking to him about health insurance the other day. He doesn't have health insurance right now. I was like, dude, it's time to get on it. And this is where you need to turn. Yeah. You need to go to healthcare.gov. And in all likelihood, most people who are working for gig work rates, they do qualify for little to no out-of-pocket.
Yeah.
The premiums are going to be super low or non-existent.
You might be able to get one of those $10 plans.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And yeah, it's not just a lack of healthcare, though, when it comes to benefits. There are few to no benefits at all when it comes to gig work, right? The gig economy isn't going to offer you access to retirement benefits. There's no paid vacation time. Although you can take as much time off as you want.
Yeah.
You're not going to get paid for
it's just not paid.
Yeah. And that's a bummer, right? When you're like, I feel like I need a couple of weeks at the beach. And it's like, well, sorry.
You're gonna pay on both ends. You're not going to be earning any money. And guess what? It's going to cost you.
Yeah, you might need to open up your gig work app and take some gigs while you're trying to rest and recuperate and get away from
take
work.
Take some surveys while you're out there on the beach.
Exactly. And yeah, although not all employers offer a match for your retirement contributions, you certainly won't get that access to free money while you're gigging. You can still open up your own account. You can start contributing, which is great, but don't expect any benefits from that side gig that you're doing. You know, there's no workers' comp either, Matt, and that's something to think about. If you break your leg, God forbid it, while delivering a food order, you don't have access to a short-term disability policy in all likelihood through that gig company. You need to have your own policy. And if you don't, you might be laid up out of work, unable to make any income with nothing coming in. So that is definitely one of the most insidious things about gig work is if something happens, you're kind of SOL, really, to a certain degree.
Yeah, another downside to gig jobs, the pay is not all that great, man. We've got some stats here, so hang on. 85% of gig workers make less than $500 a month, which it's not so great. And again, this is fine, actually, if this is a part-time thing. But if that's what you're making, you know, gigging full-time, then that's going to be pretty terrible. How much you can make in the gig economy just depends on a whole lot of different factors. For instance, those MTurk surveys, like, they're not going to pay you much, that's for sure. But maybe if you want to, you know, if you want to earn a few bucks while you're laying out there on the beach, if you do your research and if you only take the very best paying surveys, the best jobs, you might be able to make $8 to $10 an hour. The average pay of someone who drives full-time for Uber is just under $30,000 annually. So you take that, you break it out to the average hourly rate, and it's going to be less than $20 before expenses. And then after that, don't forget, you've got all the other additional expenses when it comes to maintaining a vehicle. Cars are not cheap to keep up and running.
Yeah, $20 an hour doesn't sound bad. And then you're like, wait a second. When you factor in the IRS rate for mileage and the wear and tear on your car, the extra oil changes you're going to have to do, you're burning gas, you're potentially paying extra for insurance, all that stuff. The pay's not as good as it initially seems. Mm-hmm. And the next downside we got to cover, Matt, is that it's just harder to stop working. We talked about like being harder to get away for vacation because you don't get compensated for that vacation time in any way. But I feel like a lot of jobs actually feel constant for people these days. We've got email apps on our phone. We've got Slack on our phone. And you know, it feels like you can never fully get away from the office.
Can't disengage.
When you look at the stats of what happens when people do go on vacation, they're still checking in with their boss. They're still checking in with their manager. They might work still for an hour every day just to kind of make sure things don't fall apart. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really, really bad. Like that's a bad, you're not going to be able to actually fully realize the benefits of that time away if you don't actually fully get away. But yeah, we'd like to see you take those apps off your phone completely because it's unhealthy, really, to be constantly connected.
Yeah, and that's for a traditional job, a job that might have more healthy boundaries.
Right. Think about how stressful it can be if your literal livelihood is attached to your phone, which you also make calls and texts on to your friends, and then, well, let me see what's going on in the gig. Are there any good gigs available right now? And so when you can start making money at the tap of your finger, it's just easier to go in that direction more frequently or to feel stressed about the fact that, is that what I should be doing right now? Should I be gigging as opposed to sitting here watching a baseball game or whatever? And yeah, I think it can be hard to shut it down, especially for drivers, like people who do Uber and Lyft or Roadie, stuff like that. Think about the Uber and Lyft drivers, Matt, who are getting pinged for the next ride before the current one is even over. And they're like, I guess I'll do one more. It can just be difficult to not feel compelled to work when what you actually need is some time off to rest. You're trying to shut it down. And everything, all that technology is kind of conspiring against you to get you to keep working, keep the app up, and keep doing work when you need to chill.
Yeah. There's those physical things that are kind of calling you back to the work, like the notifications on your phone, and just the awareness that if you are not working, you are not making money. Like those are physical things that like, oh, I need to be working. But then, like you said, like there is just the stressful mental side of it. And I feel like, honestly, this is the most insidious aspect of gig work, is that it is just constant. It's always there. And so I think it would take somebody with a lot of discipline, somebody with like very hard, clear boundaries to understand that like, all right, I am actively saying no to income by, you know, turning off notifications for the app for the next 12 hours or whatever it is. But understanding that you have to proactively put measures in place to make sure that this isn't going to wear on your mental health and just destroy other things in your lives that are just even more important than maybe earning another buck, relationships, your health, just mental health in general as well. There are just so many different aspects that can start to crumble when we let something like gig work seep its way into our lives.
Yeah, it makes me think of the analogy that you gave earlier with the rocks in the sand. And it's like, it can start to mentally feel like your gig work is encroaching on your brain like that, right?
There's sand everywhere.
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's like glitter. It's like, oh my gosh.
I must respond. I must do something. And I think that is one of the biggest downsides, is that it can feel like you're always on. And you always have to respond, when in reality you don't. But with gig work, it can feel like that, especially when every single gig that you make directly corresponds to how much you're going to be able to save or invest, or how much money you're going to have to buy groceries that month.
That's right.
But we've got more to get to. Should you consider gig work? When is it right? And then how do you choose the best one for you? Well, we'll talk about that right after this break. We're back now that we've covered some of the pros, some of the cons that gig work has to offer. We have discussed some of the good things that gig work has done to employment in this country, and then the insidious nature, the dark ways in which it can have a hold on you that's not good. Well, should you consider doing gig work would be the question. And when we're in tough financial situations, sometimes we don't have many, if any, options that we can take when it comes to work. The fact that gig work exists, like we said earlier, is great specifically for people in who just lost a job and they're looking for ways to pay the bills this week, this month. Matt, I'll be the first to admit that gig work, it's not really on my radar these days. I'm not very interested. We've got a lot going on with the podcast and our website and the stuff that we're pursuing, and gig work would feel like another thing I have to do that I'm not interested in jumping on. But I have done some in the past. Actually, I think I talked years ago about my one Lyft ride that I gave because they had a sign-up bonus of $1,000.
Which was like an error, I think. like in the programming language, it was like up for like 5 hours before they pulled it.
They quickly corrected it because they knew they were going to lose a lot of money, and they did, and I made $1,000 for giving one Lyft ride. But one of my favorite gig jobs was doing Rapify. There are so many car wrapping scam sites out there. I don't want to tell people, yeah, get your car wrapped and make some side money, but there are, I believe, one, maybe two that are not scam artists, and Rapify is one. We'll link to it in the show notes. But I liked that because I got paid for every mile I drove with my car without having to do regular work. I went in one time, got the wrap put on, and then I just made money because I was driving to different places. That is my favorite kind of gigging. But yeah, running our own small business and freelancing on occasion is great for me, just not interested. But for some folks, I think it's worth considering, especially if you're in a place of like immediate financial need.
Yeah, and so something to consider is if you've been able to put together a solid financial foundation and you find yourself out of work, like maybe the best course of action for you actually isn't to immediately download an app and to look to start making some money. Maybe instead it's time for you to invest in some self-improvement. And that can vary, right? Whether that means getting a master's in something that you're already interested in. You could check out like a certificate program in a new field, or even just, you know, some downtime where you are able to reflect and to think through what you want your life to look like and what you want to spend your life doing. I think this is going to be maybe particularly challenging if you are super frugal, you know, just sitting there not earning any money and instead costing yourself money. I think I would have a maybe difficult time not immediately taking action. But we live in such a rushed society that I think that that people need to hear this countercultural message. This is one way that I think it might pay to be a nonconformist, to be a little bit of a contrarian, and to not accept the always hustling kind of mentality where you're just always just rushing off to your next gig.
That Gary Vaynerchuk style of living.
I think we do too much of that. And instead, sometimes what we need to do is just reflect and maybe make better decisions and fewer of them.
Yeah, and I think the less money that you have on hand, the less financial security that you have, the more apt you are to take a job where you're getting underpaid.
Sure.
The more apt you are just to take something quickly. And I've seen friends do that, Matt. It's terrible. I hate it. I'm like, you're smart. You're gifted. You have an education. Like, you have so much to offer. And you took this job, not because you wanted to do it and get paid less, but because you felt like you had to because you didn't have enough money in savings. And so that's why, yeah, we are big fans of our listeners saving more money, having the financial resources to say no to things that they don't want to pursue, not feeling like they have to. And yeah, so let's say you are, gig work is going to work for you. You either just want to do it part-time or you are in immediate need and you're like, man, I feel like it does make sense for me to, yeah, do some gig work on the side. Well, take into consideration what you like to do first. Just like we mentioned, it's worth thinking through what you want your life to look like, right? Even if it's just temporary. It's not always all about the money. But then consider if you have any specific talents that you could use in the space. You know, look for those type of gigs specifically. The benefit here is that if you have a specialized skill or talent that you're able to put to use, then you're going to be compensated better for it. If you choose the lowest hanging fruit, the easiest gig work that's most accessible, it might be easier and quicker to sign up, but you might not get paid the most. So yeah, make sure you also factor in any cost that you're going to incur before believing that compensation hype. You know, we talked about how much less you might actually make if you're doing rideshare based on, you know, hey, you'll probably make this much money. And it's like, but they don't tell you what the expenses are. Make sure you factor that stuff in too so that you have a realistic picture of what you'll actually be making.
That's right. And so let's kind of talk about maybe some of the places that you can look for different gigs, for maybe some different flexible work from home options too. If you are looking for for something along those lines, check out flexjobs.com. That's one of our favorite sites for you to turn to. It isn't free, but man, it is the best site for flexible job opportunities. If you're going to look for more of those, you know, these gig type jobs like we've been discussing, sidehustle.com, and that's hustle, just H-U-S-L. That's a great site with reviews about the different side hustle jobs that you can pursue. But especially if you are a creative, Fiverr is going to be a great site for you to find clients through. That's one of the sites where it's definitely going to pay to have a particular niche that you excel at. And Upwork, that's another awesome site too that makes it really easy to look for work. All of those are great resources for you to look online, and we'll make sure to link to all of those within our show notes.
Yeah, looking in the right place is part of it. Don't necessarily just go with the gig that your friend recommends or they've been doing for a little while. Do your research and see if you can find something that pays better or utilizes your skills even more than, you know, the gig that your neighbor down the street is doing. And also, I think it's important when you're thinking about gig work to always have an exit plan in mind. You know, one of the reasons that, Matt, you and I, we like the site Fiverr, we think it's good, it's because you'll be able to utilize some unique skills that you have and continue to expand and refine your ability to generate income pretty easily, even outside of the platform itself. Like, you could build up a book of business and eventually kind of start your own thing. Starting on Fiverr doesn't mean that you have to gig forever. It can be the start of your own business, really. That's tougher to do, though, when you're looking into something like delivering packages. But whether it is using your gig work as a stepping stone to building your own business, or whether it is having like an end date in mind, like, I am going to pound the pavement and find a job and use my network, and within the next 6 months, my goal is to be out of gig work altogether. Or yeah, if your exit plan is just to say, once I reach this certain level in savings, gig work is helping me get there, and then I'm done with it. Having an exit plan, though, and not just letting it go on in perpetuity is a good approach when we're thinking through how gig work should fit into our lives.
Yeah, and I like what you said too about Fiverr, but like essentially what you're talking about there is using the skills that you are gaining and that you're refining within that platform to potentially turn that into something that you completely control on your own, like outside of that platform, where they aren't taking a cut, where they're not telling you what to do, and you've got your own book of clients.
Yeah.
Like being able to translate that into something you fully control into a bona fide business is huge.
Yeah, eventually hanging your own shingle, getting your own clients, eating what you kill, being the master of your own domain.
Exactly, yeah. And so just being able to basically, like you said, master of your own domain, like you want to have control over your future, and you're going to be able to do that when you are the one calling the shots. Generally speaking, like, gig work is going to unlikely be the best answer for most folks in an ongoing way, right? Because of the lack of benefits, the different downsides that we mentioned, right? Inferior pay, no meaningful ability to advance within the company. This isn't an awesome primary work solution for most people if we're talking about doing it for years on end. It is awesome, you know, like we said, if you've lost your job, it can bridge that gap pretty well. And it's also going to be awesome if you have a savings or a debt payoff goal, and you're using gig work to help you to achieve it more quickly in addition to your main gig. But just know your timeline and the reason that you are using that gig work, because we don't want it to become your main gig, your main thing by default. We kind of want you to be looking up towards the horizon, and for you to have a game plan with your work.
Yeah, the fact that gig work exists, we would say, is in many ways a good thing. If you lose your job tomorrow, you can provide for yourself or your family because gig work is just sitting there in the background waiting for you to tap into it. And money isn't everything, Matt. I think some people might find that being a dog walking gig worker works really well for their lifestyle. They've got really low expenses. They love doing this. They love all of those flexible benefits that gig work provides. And if that job not only pays the bills, but provides a significant amount of like work satisfaction and life satisfaction, then it's all good in our book. Like, we're not going to hate on anybody who says, actually, gig work is the right thing for me, and it's the right thing for me to be doing on the reg. But, you know, as the gig economy grows, it does threaten to change the relationship even more between employer and employee than it has already. And it's important for individuals, for consumers, to know that gig work comes with significant downsides, mostly which most of them are financial in nature. And while gig work does make sense in certain scenarios for certain people, it's not a great choice, I think, for most folks.
That's definitely true, man. All right, let's go ahead and get back to the beer that you and I shared during this episode. This was a Fleffo Sando, which when I said at the beginning, folks probably didn't, I don't know, maybe you had no clue what type of beer this is, but it is an imperial milk stout brewed with cocoa nibs, peanut butter, lactose, vanilla, and natural marshmallow flavors. This is by Pipeworks Brewing. What were your thoughts on this one, dude?
All right, so I have a couple thoughts. One, we should only drink imperial milk stouts from now on because regular milk stouts are a little boring, and this one was not boring.
It is definitely not boring.
Definitely packed in some flavor. The peanut butter, the marshmallow vibes, I felt like took this to a whole new level. It made me, like, I'm not usually a huge milk stout guy, but this milk stout is one I would definitely go back to because of the fact that it was a little more robust, like a little bit bigger, and then also it had these other flavors going on. It wasn't just one note, lactose and or anything like that. Like, it had kind of a well-rounded flavor profile, and it was kind of unique.
Yeah, it was also a little boozy. I feel like that was the first thing I noticed. Some beers are able to use the flavors not to mask it, but just to kind of incorporate that into the beer, whereas I felt like that was the first thing I noticed with this beer. But, you know, it was a milk stout, but it's got sort of like this more aggressive flavor profile. I guess that was like maybe the imperial nature that you were kind of commenting on. But like that lactose, it makes you think of marshmallows, right? There's lactose in this beer. But it wasn't kind of like the overly sweet marshmallow. Like it was more like a marshmallow that's caught on fire, like over the campfire a little bit. And so it kind of had like this bitter edge to it. I think it added to that robust nature of this beer. It definitely wasn't just kind of like a dessert milk stout.
Yeah.
It definitely had that punch that you oftentimes fine with maybe like a Russian imperial stout.
Yeah, not nearly as bitter as those usually are, but I dug it, man. Yeah, I thought it was really good. Pipeworks, they're out of what, Chicago? They make good beers, so I really enjoyed this one.
Most definitely. And by the way, have you ever had a Fleffo, like a Fleff sandwich or
no,
whatever?
No, never have.
I mean, I assume it's like a PB&J with like melted marshmallow or like the marshmallow spread. Have you ever gotten that before?
No, not really, but I think we had some when I was a kid back in the day, but
that just seems like decadent
seems like
living,
a vintage sandwich, right? Yeah, for sure. Like this is what they used to eat back in the 60s for lunch or send their kids to school with. And yeah, I like the beer form probably better than I like the sandwich form, but I'd try that too.
All right, that's going to be it for this episode. Listeners can find our show notes up on the website at howtomoney.com. We'll make sure to link to some of the different resources and sites that we mentioned during this episode.
No doubt. And if you haven't yet subscribed to the show, please do so you get notified whenever we release an episode. And Matt, that's going to do it. So until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.